Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer 89.5 KVRF presents Dog Talk Radio, hosted by Robert and Michelle Forto. On Dog Talk Radio, we do just that. Talk dogs. Everything from introducing a new puppy into your home to the health and welfare of your canine senior citizen and all points in between. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Dog Talk Radio here on KVRF 89.5 FM here in the Mat-Su Valley of Alaska. RadioFreePalmer.org, DogWorks Radio on Twitter and Facebook, and sitting beside me is our host for Dog Talk Radio. Her name is Michelle Forto. She is the lead trainer for Alaska DogWorks. Michelle, how's it going?
It's going quite well. We've enjoyed some rain in the last few days and broken up from that terrible heat that we were suffering up here in Alaska.
You know, we are back to our normal temperatures here in Alaska, high 60s, 70s, a few 80s here and there, but this is what we're used to.
Absolutely, it's quite comfortable. So how's it been going for Team Aneke?
Team Aneke is going well. If you don't know anything about Team Aneke, during the winter we are out mushing dogs, and we have a kennel of dogs named Team Aneke, named after our first lead dog, and we also host Mushing Radio here at the same time, 7 p.m. Alaska time on KVRF. So we talk about mushing during the winter and dog training during the summer, spring, and fall. So Team Aneke is doing well, and we are going to talk a little bit about mushing and things that go on here in Alaska and what we call the burrow regulations, at least in terms of owning dogs, not only a one-dog household, but also a multiple-dog household like mushing kennels, which there are many of them up here. And for folks that are listening here in the Mat-Su Valley, I'm sure you know about the trials and tribulations of a sled dog named Wizard that has been in the news the last month or so ago and all that it entailed. And we aren't going to get too much into that, but we are going to talk about their burrow regulations. That's an important topic, especially for folks that own more than one dog. But before we do that, Michelle, what is going on Dog Talk? Last week we talked to a lady about the Golden Retriever, and the week before we talked about the Siberian Husky. Who's upcoming on our breed series?
You know, that's pretty open wide at the moment because I'm having trouble getting anybody willing to discuss their breed of choice on the radio. For some reason, once people find out we're on the radio, they get a little bit scared off.
I don't know why. It's just carrying on a conversation. We do it all the time. I think we have four or five shows going on at once on Dog Talk, Dog Works Radio, or Dog Works Radio Network. So I guess we're old hat at it. You got to be able to just sling the fat from here and there.
Sling the fat. Wow, you've really got your radio lingo going today. You know, I agree. I think that people get a little bit nervous. They think we're going to drag them into the studio, and they've got to have the big mic in front of their faces, and that's not how we do it. It's a call-in. You simply can call us from your cell phone, in your car. Our last guest was sitting at the Fred Meyer's parking lot down in Soldotna. So, I mean, it's pretty laid back and pretty comfortable. So if you have a breed of choice that you'd like to discuss with us on Dog Talk Radio in the next coming weeks, give us a call. Let us know. We'd be happy to have you come on the show.
That is right. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter, again, at Dog Works Radio. So before we do that, Michelle, before the end of the show, we're going to take a minute or two to talk about the 15 quietest dog breeds. I think that goes right hand in hand with this topic of talking about burrow regulations and all that it entails. I am sure that there's some type of noise variation or variance in that burrow regulation. So let's get right to it. The burrow regulations for the Mat-Su Valley here in Alaska, for folks that are listening outside, I'm sure it's very similar to what you have to offer. I know you and I lived in Denver for a long time when we broadcasted this show from our training facility in Denver, and there, pretty much cut and dry, you could have up to three dogs in a single family household of any type or size, but it could not be more than three. Do you recall anything else about the major metropolitan regulations that we are used to?
Well, in Denver, it was three dogs, but you could not have certain types of breeds in Denver. In particular, there is a statewide now breed ban on pit bulls in the Denver metro area and most of the state of Colorado. There are a few cities in the outlying areas that do allow pit bulls, but that's a huge problem down there. We're talking about Alaska today, and you had mentioned sled dog kennels and things. That's not necessarily my focus today, but I'm glad that you brought that up because sled dog kennels seem to be in the limelight any time a burrow violation is happening. So if there's a violation with dogs, we always, always, always hear about, oh, it was a sled dog kennel. Oh, it was a musher. Oh, it was an Iditarod musher. Well, there are times when it's not a musher or Iditarod or sled dog kennel, recreational or not. And that's what I wanted to bring forth to people so that they've got a little bit of knowledge going on. In Alaska, in the Matsu Valley, you can own up to 5 registered dogs. 5 or more requires a kennel registration, and I think a lot of people aren't aware of that. There are a lot of people here in the Matsu Valley who own 5 or more dogs, and they could be any type of dog. You know, you've got 2 or 3 large dogs, and maybe you've got 1 or 2 small dogs, and well, lo and behold, you're up to 5 dogs already. Once you're up to 5 dogs, were you aware, Robert, that you are required to license your dogs as a kennel?
Of course I am, because we have 30.
Well, a lot of people are not aware of that limitation and that the next step for you is to become a licensed and registered kennel. And in doing that, you put yourself in a completely different regulation outside of being just a regular pet owner. But that being said, even regular pet owners are expected to maintain certain criteria and care for their dogs, such as you must have vaccinated your dog against rabies from age 6 months and older, and that vaccination must be kept current. Current means that at 6 months of age, your dog gets a 1-year vaccination for rabies, and then at 18 months of age, 1 year later, they receive a 3-year vaccination, and then every 3 years from that date forward, they should receive another rabies vaccination to remain current.
Totally agree.
Okay, so what kind of shelter do you think a person that owns less than 5 dogs would be required to have?
I believe they could probably just stay in the house, but of course you need adequate shelter from the elements as well as shade.
Right, that would be correct. So humane animal care regulations state that all animals must have adequate shelter and freedom of movement in sanitary conditions must be provided for each animal, adequate food and water, and provide animal with proper vet care. So what that means is that adequate shelter doesn't necessarily mean a dog house. It just means that the dog must be able to get in out of the elements, as you mentioned. That doesn't just include inclement weather. It does include getting in out of the sunlight. It also means that they need a place that is dry for them to be able to lay down and relax. Freedom of movement, that doesn't necessarily mean that they need to be confined in a yard or a kennel or a kennel run or on a dog run or on a chain. It just means that they have to, within their shelter, they have to be able to be free to move about, okay? Sanitary conditions is a huge issue that I notice from time to time with my regular pet owners. A lot of them don't understand that the only time of the year you pick up poop in Alaska is when the snow melts. Haven't you noticed that to be a problem in and around our clients?
I have, but you know, today there is many, many aspiring entrepreneurs out there that will do it for you.
Absolutely, and we saw that particular industry grow very quickly and very, very fast in and around Denver. Poop scooping is a lucrative business nowadays. I don't know how big it is in Anchorage. I haven't seen it here in the Valley, but maybe somebody listening will take off with that. There's a lot of teenage kids out there that are finding it difficult to have a job. I'm sure poop. Picking up poop is not a bad idea. From what I understand, there were lots of people in Denver making a good living at doing that. In Alaska, Did you know that you should not allow your dog to be in the back of your pickup truck unrestrained?
You're not allowed, or you should not?
You're not allowed.
Hmm.
In Alaska, dogs should be safely crated or restrained on a non-metal surface without risk of jumping from the vehicle and preventing strangulation. A non-metal surface is because a dog on a metal surface has a tendency to slide around and be bounced out of the back of a moving vehicle. I have witnessed a dog tethered on a leash that was too long fly out of the inside of a car. They had the windows down too low, and the lady had the leash on her hand, and he went out the passenger side of the car and was strangling when we were able to flag her down and get her to stop her vehicle and help that little terrier from dying that day. It was Tyler and I who witnessed that. It was pretty scary. So it's not just the back of a pickup truck. I always suggest to people that traveling with your dog, they should be in a crate, whether it's in your car or in the back of your pickup truck. It's a safety thing. It's not just to keep the dog restrained. If you're involved in an accident, the safest place for that dog to be is a crate. That way, if you are in an accident and a door remains open in your vehicle or a window, your dog doesn't freak out and jump out of that vehicle and cause more injury to himself and or cause another accident, which has happened. Anything further, Robert,
that you can think of?
I'm not going over the entire Title 24 of the borough regulations. I'm just bringing up some things that maybe not everybody knows about. One of the biggest things I can tell you is pay attention. If you notice that a neighbor of yours has a few more animals than they should, and they might need some help getting those animals proper care, such as shelter or water or food or anything like that, give them a hand. A lot of people that are new to Alaska just don't understand that all animals do require shelter here in our state. That includes horses as well as dogs, as well as goats and anything else that you've got that you think that can handle the elements. They still need a shelter.
They do, and I don't know much about this, but what about cats and other indoor animals? I'm sure that they may not be as strict on cats, but what about other ones, such as gerbils, hamsters, guinea pigs?
The cat rules are fairly similar to the dog rules as far as how many you can own before you have to be registered as a cattery, but I didn't really go into that because this is Dog Talk Radio. Other animals and things, you know, you'd have to probably look into it a bit closer. I do know that in Alaska, every horse that you own has to have a structured shelter that is approximately 12 feet by 12 feet in size, and I could be mistaken on that, but that's not laid out very clearly on the borough Title 24 regulations. But I would have to say that more people in Alaska have horses and dogs and cats versus exotic animals.
Yeah, I don't know if a python would do well here in our climate.
I don't think so.
So with that, Michelle, I know you didn't prepare for, but tell us a little bit about the sled dog regulations or a sled dog kennel regulations. What is the process that we have to go through in order to be a kennel and have a proper license?
Well, we have to follow the same guidelines as any other pet owner. All of our dogs must carry a rabies vaccination. The difference in registering our dogs is that we register the kennel. So every five dogs faces a registration fee, but because we own 30 dogs, they break it down differently. We don't pay the per dog price for registration. We pay a multi-dog price, so it's a little bit different. But we are required to maintain our registration and maintain our license. We have to allow open inspection of our kennels at any given time. And our kennels, if you are going up for kennel registration, your kennel is inspected prior to receiving your license. And in order to pass that inspection, you must have shelter for each and every dog that you own. We use dog houses and we use tie-outs. Our dogs have freedom of movement. We also do have some kennel runs, and those kennel runs meet the requirements for adequate space for that dog to move around in, and that is 12 by 3.5, I believe, is what our size is, and that's adequate. They do contain a shelter inside that kennel, even though that kennel is already underneath and inside of our barn. But everybody will ask, how long is the chain? This is where a lot of mushers make a big mistake. We follow ISDRA regulations as far as how our kennel was designed.
Mush with pride, not ISDRA.
I'm sorry, mush with pride. We follow those guidelines on how our kennel was designed, and our kennel chains are within or just under 5 feet in length, and that is so that the dogs can touch noses and play a little bit, but not so long that they get tangled up.
That's right. And, of course, another big question that a lot of people have that are not in the mushing scene or mushing world is these guys are not on those tie-outs all the time. They get out and exercise, quite a bit in the winter, but during the summer months, our kennel and many kennels included, we do a lot of free run playtime, so the dogs get to interact and run and play off their chains and in a free environment. In our case, it's in our backyard.
Absolutely. It's a different type of socializing for the sled dogs, and it's healthy and it's good for them to do so. One thing I need people to be aware of, if you are a recreational musher, a musher that is just getting into the sport, or you have a child that is interested in mushing, and you go out and you buy half a dozen sled dogs, or you acquire half a dozen sled dogs, keep in mind that just putting up a few drop chains that are any number of lengths under a few trees and some brush, that is not adequate shelter for your dogs. They must be able to get in a location that is off the ground and kept dry. They should not be able to get their chains tangled up in brush or tree branches or anything like that. You'd be surprised. Dogs are pretty resilient, but they are tenderfooted.
That's right. And, you know, one of the most common questions that people have, or I guess it's not a question, but more of a point that we should make, is never get more pets or more dogs than you can provide for. And I think that's a big problem, not only in the mushing community, but just families in general. You know, they get one dog, and that dog turns into two or three. Dogs and pets in general are very expensive. We go by the rule of thumb, it's approximately $1 to $3 a day per dog. And that's what our budget is for our kennel. It's well over $1,000 a month just to feed and care for our sled dogs. So if you have three dogs at $3 a day, that's $90 a month just to feed and care for your dogs. And we always ask, is that in your budget? Can you afford to do that, whether it be 3 or 30? Because that extra $90 a month, that's quite a bit out of the pocketbook, isn't it, Michelle?
Yeah, and I'm really glad that you did bring that up, because a lot of times people don't factor that in. A simple bag of dog food for one dog per month is not adequate for sled dogs. They do require a different type of nutrition. Even in the off months, most mushers will provide different types of supplements. We feed the same year-round with an addition of fattier foods in the wintertime, but for the most part, we feed twice a day, meat and kibble twice a day, and we do a third brothing in the middle of the day when it's hot. A brothing is the addition of water with a small amount of kibble.
That's right. So, again, make sure that you're able to provide for your dogs not only in food and shelter, but also the proper exercise requirements. And if you have comments or questions, or you want to tell us about your dealings with the borough and their regulations, send us a message on Facebook or Twitter at DogWorks Radio. You're listening to Dog Talk Radio here on KVRF and streaming on our website, dogworksradio.com. Michelle, we're going to turn our attention here in our last 10 minutes or so to the 15 most quiet dog breeds, according to the Shine blog on yahoo.com. And I'm sure that you have dealt with many of these guys being quiet or not so quiet. So we're going to run them down 15-1. There are, of course, a few ties, but number 15 on the list is the Collie. And, of course, that is not necessarily the quietest breed, is it, Michelle?
No, I think that would depend on environment for a collie.
Well, how in the world could Lassie tell the owners that Timmy was down the well if he was quiet?
All true, but he probably had a very good trainer.
That is right. Number 14 is the Irish Setter. Number 12 is also a tie. It is Shar Pei and the Rhodesian Ridgeback.
I would agree with that.
I do, too. You know, we've had a Rhodesian Ridgeback in training not too long ago. Not the most quietest breed, but not an incessant barker either.
He was mixed, so I will give him the benefit of the doubt, but we have trained full-blooded Rhodesians, and they are a majestic breed.
Number 11 is the Golden Retriever. Of course, one of the top breeds in the United States, the Golden Retriever is at number 11.
They listed that as a quiet breed. I've bred Golden Retrievers. They are not necessarily quiet.
Well, they're in 11th place, so there's still 10 dog breeds ahead of him to be the quietest. Number 9 is also a tie, the Bull Mastiff and the St. Bernard, so the big boys of the dog breeds. I have a tendency to think they're not that loud of a barker. They're pretty quiet themselves.
Yeah, they are quiet.
You know, we just had two of these guys in our kennel this past holiday weekend, and we did not hear a peep out of them, the Bernese Mountain Dog. Pretty quiet dogs, aren't they?
They were quiet, but they would bark. They alert bark at things that they should be barking at.
Right, and of course, alert barking is a little bit different than incessant barking. Think of the little yippy dogs in terms of noisemakers.
Oh, like the Shih Tzu that we have right now?
Well, he's definitely not in the top 15, is he? Okay, we are at number 6 in the top 15 quietest dog breeds, according to Yahoo Shine, shine.yahoo.com. Number 6 is the Mastiff, another big boy.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Is that the hooch dog?
I always think of it when they say Mastiff. I think of the Sandlot dog. The hooch dog is not, it's a Mastiff, but I thought it was a Doggy Day Bordeaux?
I believe that's what it is. But you know, at 200 pounds, as if the Mastiff is, I don't think you have to worry about being quiet. Or being loud, anyway.
Absolutely.
Number 5 is the Whippet. You know, this is one of those little dogs, but they're ranked here on our list.
I think they're too frightened to bark.
I guess so. Number 4, also a smaller breed, very similar in size to the Whippet, is the Italian Greyhound.
I would agree.
Number 3, the Great Pyrenees. Not a peep out of these guys. Another...
No, absolutely. We trained one from puppyhood to adulthood several times over several periods during football season, actually, for one of the Broncos punters. And Boss is a really quiet dog, and he's absolutely fabulous. I would recommend them for anybody that wants a big dog and has children. They're great.
And in the top 2 spots, it is a tie for number 1, the Great Dane and the Newfoundland. Very big dogs and not so loud in terms of barking. You know what I find
here? I think that we shouldn't have a tie there. I think that there is an absolute number 1 quietest dog ever.
And what should that be?
That would be the stuffed dog.
The stuffed dog. But you know, as we go down this list, and of course we did not make this list on ourselves, it was made by the pet experts on the Shine blog on Yahoo. All of the big boys are the quiet breeds. I find that pretty remarkable. The smaller the dog, the yippier they are.
Yeah, and you know, I noticed that they didn't list the barkless dogs.
No, they didn't.
And what would one of those be?
That would be the Basenji, the yodeling dog.
Mm-hmm.
And what is another one?
That's my number 1, is a Basenji. They are truly barkless. I would have to say that, you know, in my experience, most of our Siberian Huskies are pretty quiet. They talk, but they don't necessarily bark.
That is true.
Same with Malamutes. They don't bark. It's a different type of communication.
Well, remember, there is over 160 dog breeds under the American Kennel Club standard, so they whittled it down to 15, and in top 5 we have the Great Dane, the Newfoundland, the Great Pyrenees, the Italian Greyhound, and the Whippet for the most quietest dogs, or the most quiet dogs. So if you're in an apartment and you're looking for that dog for you, if you do not have a weight restriction, sometimes it's 40 pounds, sometimes it's 25 pounds in that apartment, check out this list on Shine blog on Yahoo for those dogs that are not going to upset your neighbors.
Absolutely, and I would recommend a greyhound, a miniature greyhound for apartment owners, or Italian greyhound.
Italian greyhound. Yeah. So, again, comments, questions, concerns, send them to us on Facebook and Twitter. At DogWorks Radio is the handle. Michelle, anything before we close?
Have a great week.
Have a great week. This is Robert Forto on behalf of our host, Michelle Forto. This is Dog Talk Radio here on KVRF. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.